Radio 4, Book at Bedtime.
Listen to life through the keenly tuned ears of Peter White.
Gates on the underground make helpful noises, beckoning you toward them.
Share his perceptions of the world.
The train, there you can hear it, is making a nice, helpful hissing noise. I got a stick to locate the doors, which in any case are now pretty chatty in their own right.
Blind Man on the Rampage, a series of soundscapes on Thursday mornings at 9:30 here on BBC Radio 4.
Well, now it's time for episode 7 of Other People's Children by Joanna Trollope. Elizabeth has moved into Tom's house in Bath. Dale has told Lucas she's frightened by the prospect of their father's forthcoming marriage to Elizabeth. Nadine has finally been forced to admit she can't cope and that the children are running wild. She sent them to live with Matthew and Josie. The reader is Penelope Wilton.
Josie had heard she'd got the teaching job. She should have been feeling celebratory, but she wasn't. She lay on her and Matthew's bed. She was fully dressed. It was quiet in the bedroom, quiet enough to hear the sounds from downstairs, the murmur of the television, the noises from the kitchen, where Matthew was, without much trouble apparently, making the children wash up. Except Becky. Becky was in her bedroom with the door shut. She'd been there since 6 o'clock after her mother rang. Nadine rang every day, sometimes twice. Nadine had rung this time about money. She'd spoken first to Becky and had then insisted on speaking to Matthew. Josie, grating cheese in the kitchen, had heard him say, "But I'm paying for the children now. You must have enough. You must." The conversation had gone on for a long time, and when Matthew had put the telephone down at last, Josie heard Becky say with a mixture of fear and rage, "You can't let her starve." "She's not starving," Matthew said. "She's just spent everything she has this month and wants more. And you should give it to her." "I give her all I can," Matthew said. "She's only got herself to look after now."
"Exactly," Becky said. "Exactly. And whose fault's that?"
Josie heard Matthew's footsteps coming towards the kitchen door. She bent over the grater. "I'm not talking to you about it," Matthew said. He opened the kitchen door. "It's none of your business."
"I don't want any supper," Becky yelled after him. "Fine," Matthew said, and shut the kitchen door.
He put his arm round Josie. "Sorry." "It's okay." "Josie?" "Yes." "I'm going to have to put her money up again. I gave her less because the kids were here, but I'll have to increase it again."
"Because your daughter tells you to?"
"Partly, I suppose, if I'm honest. And with you working now..." Josie shrank away from his embrace. "You're telling me that my money will help pay for your children so that you can give more to your ex-wife who refuses to work?" She gripped the edge of the sink. The kitchen door opened. Rufus stood there, holding his maths book. He looked at them.
"Oh," he said. Josie said, "Come in, darling." "It's my maths," Rufus said. "I can't do..."
He stopped. Matthew moved away from Josie. "Shall I help you?" Rufus looked at him doubtfully. Matthew sat down at the kitchen table. "Bring it here." Slowly, Rufus approached the table. He put the book down in front of Matthew and stepped back. "I won't bite you," Matthew said. "I'm useful for maths, if for nothing else." Rufus moved a little closer. Josie watched them. "Show me." "There," Rufus said. He leaned forward, pointing, his shoulder almost touching Matthew's. It was a scene she'd longed for. A scene which represented perhaps the first quiet, unremarkable step on the road to some kind of relationship between the two people who mattered most in the world to her. And it
it left her cold. She watched them and felt nothing. Nothing. She was empty of all good things at that moment, empty of any capacity to feel joy, even to feel love. There was no possibility of loving in the face of the rage and despair that filled her now with such intensity. "I've got a headache," Josie said. Neither Rufus nor Matthew reacted. Their heads were close. "I think you've got these in the wrong order," Matthew said. "That's what stumped you." "I'm going up to bed. If you put the grated cheese on top of what's in that dish and grill it for 10 minutes, that's supper." Rufus looked up briefly, his face abstracted. "Right," he said. "See you later," Josie said. She went out of the kitchen and up the stairs, past Becky's closed door to her bedroom. Then she lay down, still with her shoes on, and let herself cry. That must be almost 2 hours ago. She must have gone to sleep. She sat up. She didn't just feel stiff and a little cold, but grubby too, disheveled. She would go into the bathroom before the children all came upstairs, shower and wash her hair, and go downstairs in her dressing gown and make tea and try to be pleasant, ordinary. She went out onto the landing. Becky's bedroom door was open. Beside it, however, the bathroom door was firmly shut, and the sound of music coming from behind it was intermingled with the sound of running water. Becky was in the shower. When Elizabeth got back from the supermarket, there was a parking space right outside Tom's house, a big enough space for Elizabeth, who was not an experienced driver, to maneuver into without difficulty. Tom had bought her this car, just like that. Amazing her. "I want you to have a car," he said. "I want you to have freedom." Elizabeth carried the shopping bags up the steps and put her key in the front door. It wasn't locked. She pushed the door open. "Tom?" "Me," Dale called from the kitchen. Elizabeth took a breath. "Oh." Dale came to the kitchen doorway. She wore a scarlet apron over a black T-shirt and jeans. "Been shopping?" "Yes." Dale moved forward. "I'll help you carry." "Dale," Elizabeth said, "have you been here long?"
"About an hour."
"Why didn't you ring?"
"What?"
"To say you were coming. Why didn't you ring me?" Dale stooped to pick up the nearest bags. "Please leave those," Elizabeth said. "Please leave those and answer my question." Dale straightened slowly.
"I don't have to ring."
"You do now," Elizabeth said.
"This is my home."
Elizabeth put her hands in her jacket pockets. "Mine too, now. You're welcome any time, for any reason, but not unannounced. I need to know." Dale stared at her.
"Why?"
"Privacy," Elizabeth said.
Dale said fiercely, "This was my home for 25 years before my father even met you."
Elizabeth bent to take the two bags closest to her feet. "We can't have this conversation on the doorstep."
"You started it."
"No, you caused it by letting yourself into the house in our absence and without warning us."
"It's my house," Dale yelled.
She turned her back on Elizabeth and marched into the kitchen. Elizabeth lifted the shopping bags from the front doorstep into the hall and followed Dale into the kitchen. Half the cupboard doors were open. The table was piled with packets and jars.
"What are you doing?" "What does it look like?" Dale said rudely. "Spring cleaning. I always do it for Dad."
"Always?"
"Well, last year or two."
Elizabeth took her jacket off. "It's my job now, Dale, if it's anyone's. And these are my cupboards and my kitchen. I am, in an old-fashioned expression, to be mistress of this house."
"You've made that perfectly plain. You don't have to tell me."
"What do you mean?"
"My mother's photographs. What have you done with all the pictures of my mother?"
Elizabeth said steadily, "You've been in the drawing room."
"Yes."
"And where else?" Where else have you been? In our bedroom? Dale glared. Only quickly. Not too quickly, I imagine, to notice that the photograph of your mother is where it has always been. Dale was breathing fast. The drawing room was her room. The pictures are perfectly safe. They're wrapped up and packed in a wine carton for you and Lucas. Dale said vehemently, it was her room. She chose everything. She was Dad's wife. She was Dad's first choice. She was our mother. Look, said Elizabeth, trying to speak gently. I can't negotiate with a ghost like this, Dale. I really can't, and you shouldn't demand that I do either. I don't doubt that your mother was a wonderful person. The point is that she, tragically, is dead, and however fondly remembered, cannot influence how we, who are still living, choose to live our lives. When she lived here, this house was hers, and she arranged it as she wished to. Now it's going to be mine and your father's, and we will want to live in it rather differently. You want to turn us out? Dale cried. I don't. All I want is for you to respect my privacy as I respect yours. You don't respect my past. I do, Elizabeth said. All I have difficulty with is when you try and insist that the past is more important than the present or the future. You'll learn, Dale said bitterly. She untied the strings of the scarlet apron and threw it on the table. I'm going, but I'll be back. I'll be back whenever I want, because this is my home. This is where I belong. This is where I come from, and always will. What's all this? Tom said. Elizabeth lay on the bed, as she had for several hours with the curtains drawn. She said without moving, you saw? I saw a fair old muddle in the kitchen, certainly, and shopping all over the hall floor. Basil, needless to say, has found the butter. Headache? No. Elizabeth said, looking straight ahead. Dale was here when I got back from shopping. She was in the process of turning out the kitchen cupboards. She looked at Tom at last. I told her she mustn't let herself into the house whenever she pleased any more, and the row began. Tom wasn't quite meeting her eyes. How did it end? With Dale saying she would go on letting herself in whenever she wanted to, because this was her home, and always would be. Sweetheart, I'm so sorry. Elizabeth struggled up into a half-sitting position. What are you going to do? What do you want me to do? She closed her eyes. It isn't a question of what I want you to do. It's a question of what you want to do for yourself. Not just for my sake, but for the sake of this marriage we're embarking on. You don't sound very enthusiastic. It's not lack of enthusiasm, I feel, Elizabeth said. It's fear. Fear of what? Dale. Tom put his head in his hands. Can't you imagine, Elizabeth said, fighting with sudden tears, trying to be married here with both of us straining to catch the sound of her key in the lock? It wouldn't be like that. It might, Elizabeth cried. If she got in a state about something, or jealous, or lonely, she might come any time, demanding your attention, insisting on her right to come home. We don't have keys to Dale's flat. We never go there. We're never asked there. You want me to tell Dale? No, Elizabeth shouted. No, not what I want. What you want for us. Because you can see what will happen if things go on like this. But they won't. These are teething problems. The shock of the new. We mustn't get things out of proportion. Dale's just in a state while she gets used to the idea of you. I'm so sorry she upset you. Shut up, Elizabeth said. What? Stop mouthing all this stuff at me. Tom said angrily, I'm trying to explain. No, you're not. You're trying to talk yourself out of having to face what's really the matter. Which is? Elizabeth took a breath. That Dale is neurotically insecure and possessive, and that if you don't do something about it now, you'll have her for life.
Tomorrow, Penelope Audrey Wilton will read Episode 8 of Other People's Children by Joanna Trollope. It was abridged by Pat McLaughlin. The producer is Di Spears. Well, if you think dolphins are gentle, lovable creatures, you might think again after listening to Old Harry's Game, the comedy set in hell in just a moment, when Satan recruits a particularly evil dolphin to be his new assistant.
Because we bring you the key players. Because you don't want to miss the top-class action. Because the best moves deserve a replay. Selected highlights of the week's great Woman's Hour moments. You'll be sick as a parrot if you miss Weekend Woman's Hour with me, Jenny Murray, Saturdays at 4 on BBC Radio 4.
Harry's Game by Andy Hamilton, starring James Grout as the Professor, Jimmy Melville as Thomas, Robert Duncan as Scumspawn, and Andy Hamilton as Satan.
Okay, and final question. Why do you feel you are particularly well qualified to be my personal assistant?
Well, Your Satanic Majesty, I'm hard-working, good sense of humour, but obviously most important of all, I am physically repulsive to mortals.
Well, Prof, as our token mortal, is he right?
Certainly, I'd say any creature that takes the form of a giant tapeworm would probably be deemed repulsive by the majority of humans, yeah.
I don't know if I want a worm as my number two, though, honey. Even if he is 40 yards long. I mean, he's more draft excluder than demon, isn't he? I keep tripping over him, you know.
Believe me, my prince, I am a demon among demons and the most talented of tormentors.
Really? Who was your last tormentee?
Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
And how did you torment him?
I chained him to a rock and then sang the whole of Cozy's Fan Tutte.
Go on.
Whilst accompanying myself on a Hammond organ.
Oh, yes. Now that is genius. Yeah.
How does a giant worm play a Hammond organ?
Very badly. As I'm sure old Wolfgang would have noticed. Yeah.
You should have heard him scream for me to stop.
What, in German?
Yes.
Why does screaming sound so much better in German, eh? I could listen to them forever. Funny, eh? It's something to do with the umlaut, I think, and the verb being at the end, anyway. Anyway, I'll be honest with you. We are still seeing other candidates, so we will be in touch.
Thank you, my infernal emperor.
Well, he's certainly the most revolting-sounding applicant we've had. And I like the way you suffurate. That's very stylish. But, on the minus side, he's a worm. Which means there has to be a bit of a question mark over his mobility, I think.
Well, by my reckoning, that's 97 candidates you interviewed. But not counting that Hydra, whose 8 heads were interested in it as a job share.
No, those arrangements never work. Now, we've got to find someone, though, because my workload's just getting... I mean, you know, right? We are now so swamped that there are actually damned souls going unpunished. There are now human rectums down here that have never seen a single hornet. I'm embarrassed, frankly.
Have you ever thought that perhaps the whole concept of hell is now a little outmoded?
I'm listening.
Well, the whole punishing thing, it's a bit antiquated and pointless, isn't it? And very inefficient. Think of all the resources you'd free up if you didn't bother with it.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. So in future, the damned souls would arrive in hell and be greeted by assorted ghouls, demons, and beasts of darkness, who would then give them counselling and group hugs. Is that what you mean?
Well, that sort of thing, yes.
Nice try, Prof. But I wasn't born yesterday, okay? In fact, I don't think I was born.
What about when you were an angel?
No, I think he made us from kits. I'm not sure. I can't really remember. Anyway, look. Anyway, it's not the concept of hell that's the problem. It's you lot. You're too prolific. You're breathing faster, sinning faster. You're even dying faster. And you're forever inventing more and more ingenious ways of dying. I mean, first it was dynamite, then cigarettes, then it was feeding diseased sheep to cows, then flying with Aeroflot.
Well, we
And have you heard the latest one? Oh, get a load of this, right? In order to achieve the ultimate sexual experience, people have started strangling themselves. Just to try and make the earth move, and it does usually get shoveled on top of their coffin. All for one more orgasm.
Well, I think that's rather sad.
Sad? It's hilarious. Where's your sense of humour? I mean, there is every possibility that mankind will be the first species to masturbate itself into extinction. Now, you're not going to tell me that isn't funny.
Oh, but the poor people who do that sort of thing...
They're not poor people who do that sort of thing. They're rich, bored people.
Well, they're disturbed, presumably.
Well, a few of them are disturbed. I mean, the rest are just found in the morning. All right, Scumspawn, we know you got a decent roar, but you're still not getting the job.
But please, I am your most loyal of demons. I only exist to serve you, my prince.
Yeah, well, you can best serve me by going off and finding any newly damned individuals who've not yet received their introductory scourging.
Tis done, my liege. I shall make them drink dragon's bile.
Yeah, well, try not to spill it, yeah? Last time it burnt right through your hoof.
You shall hear their tormented wails.
Tormented wails. Now, there's a thought.
What?
Oh, no, nothing. Hello. Listen.
Oh, is that the worm demon with Mozart?
Well, it's not coming from an ice hockey match, is it? Come on, I know. Let's take the dog for a walk. Cerberus! Cerberus, walk here, boy. Walkies! Walkies! Yeah, all right. Hang on. What have you done with all your leads, boy? Come on.
Cerberus likes his game of fetch, doesn't he? I've lost sight of him completely now.
Well, I threw that cardinal a fair old way, didn't I?
I don't think I've visited this part of your domain before.
Oh, it's a new extension. Yeah, I've knocked through 12 pits to create a big open plan abyss or a oblivion-themed suffering space, as a designer likes to call it.
Well, it's very nice.
Oh, it's not finished. No, they've got to come back and make good.
I've been thinking, you know, about our bet.
Look at all these dirty mugs they've left. I don't know, the times I've told them, honestly.
You know, our wager, that if I can change Thomas into a caring human being, then you'll let my wife stay with me here. Well, I was thinking, I mean, the bet's pretty pointless, really, isn't it?
And this isn't the colour I asked for. I definitely said despair black. This is more like chaos ebony.
Because, let's face it, Deborah is such a nice... kind person that she's, well, she's bound to end up, you know, in the other place, isn't she?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, no doubt. Does the edge of that abyss look straight to you?
I was wondering, what's heaven like?
Do you think maybe you're asking the wrong person?
Well, you started out in heaven.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago.
I mean, is it very beautiful?